And it is my pleasure to introduce our main speaker, Jack Gehl.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my friend Jeff for inviting me to take part in the meeting tonight and to congratulate all the people who celebrated various lengths of sobriety. And to tell you that I have been coming to this meeting for just a little short of 13 years. I guess I could say I consider this my home group. That's probably because I know a number of people who attend this meeting that belong in a home. And I'm very happy to see so many of those people here tonight who I know love me as I love them, and I can't help but look at some of them and see them drawing a knife and fork back together, back and forth together, because they can hardly wait to viciously judge and evaluate everything that I have to say. If you're new tonight, I'm here to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're anything like me, it doesn't feel like good in the beginning. It's tough out there. It's a tough society out there. I was talking to somebody before the meeting about how difficult it is to just watch the news these days. You know, you got your Menendez, Lorena Bobbitt. That one kind of keeps me awake at night. And, you know, the usual variety of molestations, and I understand there's another serial killer at large, the Freeway 60 serial killer. We all know what's going to happen. You know, they're going to get the guy, and then they're going to interview his neighbor. We've seen it a dozen times before. The neighbor's going to say something like, he's a pleasant fellow. He was a quiet man. Kept to himself a lot. Whenever I hear those profiles, I always kind of think, gee, maybe I should start socializing. If you're new tonight, and you're anything like I was when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't feel too good. And I don't really think that there's any connection between how long I've been here and how good I feel on a particular day. I can never predict how I'm going to feel on any given morning. You know, the chances are that I'm going to feel a lot better these days. But I remember one time a guy in my, I think he was in his second year of sobriety, came up to me, and I had about 7 years, and he said, Jack, you know, I'm miserable. I feel that awful. You know, did you feel that way in your second year? And I said, look, rest assured, my second year was a living hell. And I kind of wanted the guy to, you know, maybe have something to look forward to, so I decided to tell him how my seventh year was. A living, breathing hell. So there's really no, you know, this particular week, I feel really good. In fact, I felt good for about 3 or 4 weeks. And I couldn't really tell you, I mean, part of it is that I'm employed for a short time, and I haven't been for quite a while, but I can tell you that just 6 months ago, you know, I usually walk to this meeting. And 6 months ago, where I was, and of course you never tell anybody where you are when you're there. you always have kind of a delayed forecast about how you feel if you're anything like me. But about 6 months ago, I left this meeting, and I was walking home, and I was passing Hamburger Hamlet, and there was a homeless man out in front of Hamburger Hamlet leaning up against the wall. And he looked like he was a little undernourished, and he was unshaven, and he had deep lines of depression in his face, and he had rags around his feet, and an indication that perhaps he'd peed on himself. And as I walked past this guy, we looked into each other's eyes, and he said, "Cheer up." Between how long I have been in Alcoholics Anonymous and how good I feel on a particular night. But what I've learned after I got here, and it took a while, was that it just doesn't matter how I feel. I continue to do the things that I was taught to do when I first got here, no matter how I feel. My first sponsor told me that I was like a battleship in peacetime. And that I had to keep up the drills on the ship. Even though it was peacetime, I had to keep up the drills because the war was coming. And the war always comes in life. It always comes for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a tendency to always want to do the things that I'm supposed to do only when I feel bad, like I did when I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I've learned is I just got to keep doing it. Consistency is a very important word. I'm not here to tell you tonight how to stay sober or even how to get sober. I really don't know how you would do that. If I knew that, I probably would never have had to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and yet I can tell you that I drank for 17 years before I got here, and I was never able to stop drinking until after I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here, I felt really bad, and what I was told to do was to get involved in the program and take a lot of commitments. Now, I don't know if that keeps anybody sober. As a matter of fact, I can tell you that there were other people who took commitment. First of all, what is a commitment? Okay? We hear that over and over again. Unfortunately, a lot of newcomers think we're talking romance, but a commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would say, is a dreary task. I cannot define it any more clearly than that, and perhaps that's why a lot of people shun away from it. But it is a dreary task. There's nothing exciting about stacking these chairs. There's nothing exciting about seeing if there's paper in the bathroom, or setting up the meeting, or calling main speakers and confirming them, and all the rest that goes along with getting a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous together. And yet there are people who do this constantly and have done it since I've been here, and I'm grateful to those people. And I have tried to keep up my end of the dreary task brigade since I've been here, but I cannot tell you that that's what keeps me sober, because I know other people who did more dreary tasks more frequently with more enthusiasm than I ever did, and they ain't here today. But I do know this, when I do these dreary tasks, it lessens the gnawing guilt that I have carried around with me all of my life. So I can't tell you how to stay sober, but I can tell you how to feel better about yourself. And that's what I have learned since I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not feel too good about myself when I got here, and today I feel very good about myself. Now, one of the reasons that I feel good about myself is that I maintain my dreary tasks, whether they are in Alcoholics Anonymous or anyplace else. And as long as I keep doing that, because I learned, you know, when they asked me to stick around and do a, you know, a 10-minute thing after the meeting, when I was first here, I always felt, you know, that was for somebody else to do and how that went. But I noticed that I felt bad about it for about a day and a half. And what I've learned is that for the 10 minutes, it really serves me well to do my dreary task on a regular basis. And one of the thrills about speaking tonight is that afterward I won't have to be doing my dreary task. So I have a reprieve from that. Now when I got here, I didn't... There's a Barham overpass on the 101, or maybe it's a Hollywood freeway. And I went under that pass for about 8 years because I was seeing the woman out in Sherman Oaks, and I lived in Hollywood, and I used to drink. And I used to always come home from her home, and I was somewhat loaded, somewhat drunk. And I would always go under that Barham overpass, and I still think about it today because for some reason, whenever I got near that overpass, I would be thinking about how I was going to get my life together for the very first time. You know, I can't do this anymore. I can't eat up my life anymore. I can't sit down night after night, week after week, year after year, rationalizing, taking a drink of alcohol, which never stops at one drink, and I got to keep going and keep going and keep going until I'm drunk. And I thought about stopping year after year after year. You know, if it was tonight, then I was going to stop tomorrow. If it was Friday night, then of course I was going to stop on Monday, because that made sense. It was fresh starts. If it was Thanksgiving, well, January 2nd sounded like the right time. And I'm sure that if I drank today, because that's a festive time from Thanksgiving through January 2nd. But it's changed since I've gotten sober. I think now I could rationalize right through Super Bowl Sunday. And from there, it's only a hop and a skip to Valentine's Day. So I did this year after year after year, telling myself I had to stop, acting as if it was going to be another chance for me, that I was going to have another chance at living my 20s, my late teens. But I didn't get that chance. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, thinking about one day at a time, that philosophy certainly was not new to me, because that's exactly how I drank, one day at a time. I rationalized my drinking on a daily basis and strung together 17 years of drinking. And when I got here, I sure didn't want to do what you have to do. I mean, I felt awful. I didn't want to address the problems that I had. It wasn't just, I mean, the alcohol was just the vault door, you know? It was just the door. I mean, once I quit drinking, that door opened for me. But I was still not ready to walk into the dark vault where the rats and the spiders were. I didn't want to face that part of my life. So when I got here, I did what a lot of people do. I got into a relationship. And I remember telling those around me, but you don't understand. You see, I feel more for this woman than anyone I've ever known. It's never felt quite this way before. It's so real for the very first time. And no one ever pointed out to me that for the very first time I was sober. And that perhaps that's why I was feeling these intense emotions. And so I got involved with this woman, and actually it was the longest stretch that I've refrained from Alcoholics Anonymous voluntarily. It was 17 days without a meeting. I've never gone longer than that unless I was somewhere where there were no meetings, and there are such places. And we had a beautiful relationship. That lasted for 17 days. And then I spent about the next year and a half trying to get back to where we were when it was blissful. And I tried to talk to people in Alcoholics Anonymous about it. I talked to Mr. and Mrs. Gates down here. They were very helpful to me in my early years, and I thought it might be wise on my part to take them on as my relationship sponsors. And they have served me very well. I haven't been in one in 5 years. Now, I don't know if there's anybody out there tonight who's going through a breakup, but I'm here to tell you that, you know, if you don't do anything destructive about it, it's going to be okay. I'm sure there are people out there tonight, new people, who are sitting on excruciating pain. Now, what's going to happen to you? When I was in here for the first time, I was like, what's going to happen to me? And I'm here to tell you, if nothing else, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Just come back here next week, take a dreary task. It's going to be okay. And if everything inside of you, as it did for me, says it's not going to be okay, then it's happening right. It's happening right. Because it frightens me to hear new people who say, I can't believe it. I've only been here for 12 days. I just love everybody. My life is beautiful. That's you miserable ones that are going to make it. Well, anyway, this woman just sort of butterflied out of my life, and but you see, I'm not the kind of a person who's just going to let that go. I'm going to make you crazy and say, just let go. Let go. Now. Not if this wild steer that I'm holding its tail by drags me through the entire herd. I will not let go. And I didn't. I guess I'm kind of like, I mean, she was gone, but I guess I'm kind of like the, I guess I could kind of roll around in the vestiges of her scent like a dog. And when that wore off, I decided I was going to, because it's really easy, especially where there's a will, there's a way, I decided I had to resort to my home entertainment center. And I'm not talking stereo or television. I'm talking top shelf closet, shoebox of memorabilia. As a matter of fact, in my early years, I was dubbed an archaeologist of love. A man who's capable any time, night or day, to go on a major dig. When you go on a major dig, it's much more preferable if it's a Sunday afternoon and it's raining. And you have your song. That's your theme music. I played our song, this was about 11 years ago, and our song, I thought it was a beaut. I've been waiting for a girl like you to come into my life. After we broke up, I knew it wasn't the perfect song. Had it been perfect, it would have been called, I've been waiting for you. I've been waiting for a girl like you to come into my life and treat me like scum. I went through that shoebox of memorabilia, and, you know, I had the items in there that I imagine other people might have. It's not the kind of thing you want to admit. But I could get a good half hour of pain out of our first concert stubs. There was a snapshot in there of the two of us during happier times. And it was just the right snapshot. I'm smiling at the camera and she's looking up at me adoringly. Unfortunately, it had several pieces of scotch tape all over it because I ripped it up so many times when I went on the dig. And the one thing that I've always been embarrassed about admitting that was in that box, but I was a lucky man at the time. Now it seems a little silly, but I was really lucky back then. When she'd thrown all of her things into her suitcase and fled, she had forgotten a very significant item, her hairbrush. Wait a minute, I'm not done. With strands of her hair left in it. And you haven't lived until you sit there and you pull off one strand of her hair at a time to the music of Foreigner. Just kind of watch it float down to the ground. And I'm here to tell you that one of the most horrible moments of my entire life was the day I ran out of hairs. Because I didn't want to start looking at what it was about me that had to be changed. I didn't want to change. Yeah, I could not drink as long as I came here, but I didn't want to change. Because I hate the change. I'm not good at it. You've got to put a forked stick to my neck in order for me to change. I'll tell you a triumph of change that I've had since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous to give you an idea of what my relationship to change is. I have used Colgate dental cream for my entire life. Just a habit, got into, and I've never stopped. You may know the tube, it's white and red. It has about 5 years ago it had a red screw-off cap. And I was just going to the grocery store one day, minding my own business, being a good member of AA, and I walked over to where the toothpaste section was, and I brought my toothpaste, and I went home, and somebody on Madison Avenue had the bright idea that maybe they could sell more of this Colgate dental cream by redesigning the cap from a red screw-off cap to a white flip-off cap, okay? And so I looked at that, and I was upset. That was a major thing to me. And I kind of panicked, and I realized, thank God, that I had not thrown out my old tube yet. So I took the red screw-off cap off of my old tube, I threw out the flip-off cap on the new tube, and I replaced it with the red screw-off cap. And then I proceeded to do that for the next 3 years. But I have grown in alcoholism. And one day I looked at that red screw-off cap, which was filthy and grimy, and I twisted it off and I threw it out, and I knew that I had made a major change in my life. And I'll tell you something I discovered. And this is the hell of it, I actually discovered that the white flip-off cap has an optional screw-off. And I'll tell you why that's important, because that's how I run my life. I look at a problem way over there and I decide what it is before it ever gets close enough for me to understand what it's really about. But I couldn't tell if that was a screw-off cap in reality, that it was a flip-off cap over there, and so I made my decision before it ever came into my neighborhood. And that's the way I am about all of my problems. That's the tendency that I have. I spot them way over there, and I make decisions about it. I don't let them get close to me where I can understand what they're all about. And I've had to give up a lot of things since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I have had to give up certain ways of thinking since I got here, and that's not easy, it's not pleasant, and I don't take credit for it. I have never turned it over, as we say in Alcoholics Anonymous. Never in my life have I turned over anything in Alcoholics Anonymous when it served me to turn it over. And I've never known of anyone who turned it over when it served them to turn it over. Anybody that I've ever worked with on this program, when they are in the grips of their own intense emotions and I say to them, why not turn it over, I won't even tell you what they tell me. What I've discovered is that after, you know, if I can just hold on and not take any destructive action in relation to what's going on with me, if I can just keep my mouth shut and my body still and just show up and do the stuff that I'm supposed to do when I'm going through a crisis, I notice that down the line the crisis is over and then I can go around and say, I turned that one over. But that's the only way it happens. What I'm capable of doing is not complicating the situation. And I wasn't always that way. When I first got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I fell in every trap I know of, you know. And I shouldn't have, I probably to this day shouldn't have a relationship. In Alcoholics Anonymous, certainly. We tell newcomers, you know, don't get involved your first year, don't get emotionally involved. And that's such an absurd request. I mean, it makes sense. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they listened, but they don't. And what happens, the only people I've ever known who refrained from getting into a relationship their first year were those who didn't have a choice. I've never known anybody to come to me and say, I am nuts about this woman. I want to get involved. And I said, well, we don't get involved our first year in Alcoholics Anonymous. So he said, oh, well, that's a good rule. I won't. Never saw that. It's an unrealistic rule, but it sounds good. I mean, from my experience, I think, you know, a year seems silly. I think what we ought to tell newcomers is don't get involved in a relationship ever. Because, you know, we talk about rigorous honesty. I mean, when was the last time I was honest when I approached a relationship? Now, if I were to do that, it would probably come off something like this. I'd see somebody at a meeting, I'd say, hi, my name is Jack, and I saw you from across the room over there, and I just thought perhaps it might serve us to get to know each other, and I'm certain that you probably have certain considerations about, you know, the kind of a person that you might want to get involved with. So why don't I just tell you up front what I'm really like so that you can fairly make your decision. I have the emotions of a 12-year-old. Let's start with that. Now, if you're still with me, let me just tell you a little bit about my background. Now, I drank approximately 3,500 six-packs, 4,000 bottles of wine, a half a ton of vodka, and various assorted aperitifs. And I vomited most of that up. I know that that is not a major consideration. I know that women are sometimes interested in a man's ambition. Now, where do I stand? What are my What are my nest building qualifications? How am I doing in the old twig department? Well, let me tell you, I have a lot of ambition, which may or may not excite you, I don't know, but I have always aspired. I've always aspired to getting in to the same field that I have always wanted someone to pay me to house sit my own place. I think you'll agree that that isn't going to serve me. Alcohol has always made me feel bigger than I was. Always made me feel more accepted, more competent, more adequate. I think probably the simplest way to put it is when I was in high school. You know, I took a class in ballroom dance when I was in high school. Mrs. Womack used to travel from town to town and teach ballroom dancing. And somebody talked me into doing this, and I went and did it. And she said, the way that you get women to dance with you is you do it properly. You walk across the gym floor and you look at the woman and you say, may I have this dance? And so I learned a few simple steps and I went to my first gym dance, and I didn't drink at the time. That was a long trip across the gym. Especially when I got to the end of it and I said, may I have this dance? And she said, no. And it was shortly after that that I discovered alcohol. And the first night that I got drunk and I went to a gym dance, I didn't walk across the gym floor. I bebopped. And when I got there, I didn't say, may I have this dance? All I said was, you know what she usually did? That's how alcohol made me feel. And to give that up, to go back to the long trek across the gym floor, no, not a decision that I was going to make easily. But you see, when I got here, I felt so bad that I was willing to do anything. And that is my pattern. When I feel so bad, I am willing to do anything until my life starts to get better. And then when it starts to get better, when I do all of these things that people ask me to do, and when I do the things that I know are going to keep me in good stead in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life starts to get better and I feel good, and then it's suddenly I want to clutch it all to me. I don't want you taking it away from me. My life is good. Leave me alone. Go talk to somebody else. Go have somebody else schlep across town. Go talk to somebody else about stacking chairs. I don't want to do those things. And as I said, my first sponsor told me that I got to keep up my drills in peacetime. And that's one of the things that I've learned to do here. I hate driving across Coldwater Canyon. You know, Happy New Year, by the way. This ties in. I I, of course, made the mistake that I always make around New Year's. I made another resolution. I've tried this one before. I don't know why I can't learn. I'm not going to allow any human beings to irritate me this year. I understand, not very realistic. It didn't even last, you know, through the morning of the first. The guy revving up his motorcycle just a few houses down, and I got irritated. And I get real irritated when I go across Coldwater Canyon. And the reason for that is it's only one lane, and invariably I get behind somebody who's going really slow. And with all the technology that we have in this country, the one thing that it seems has never been improved is the horn. It's just the horn. You just honk. You know, I don't want to honk at somebody who's going too slow in front of me on Coldwater Canyon. Because if, you know, you've been around Alcoholics Anonymous long enough, you know what kind of reaction you're going to get. Now, why doesn't somebody come up with another horn with several buttons on it, each for a different situation? Okay? The gentle nudge, which I could use on Coldwater Canyon. Beep, beep. Another button. Beep, beep, I'm here. Going through an intersection. Beep, beep, coming through. You know, I need a button for that. But it occurred to me that if I had these buttons, then of course I would need the final button, atomic blast. But here's the catch. I'm an alcoholic. Guess what button I'm always going to use? If I were going to wrap up, the best thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me, second to my sobriety, of course, it's that when atomic blast comes up in my 13th year of sobriety, I'm capable of hitting gentle nudge. I don't have to hit atomic blast anymore. Because every time I hit atomic blast in my life, I always regretted it. Every time I let my emotions govern my actions, I've always regretted it. And the toughest thing I know is to just keep my mouth shut and keep my body still when I want to press the atomic blast button. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me that. It didn't give it to me overnight. It has made my life go so much smoother, so much more comfortable. And I'll tell you something, comfortable was not a word that I aspired to when I got here. People would get up here and say, today my life is comfortable, and I think, what are you talking about? Who wants that? I want ecstasy. I don't want comfort. But that's what I want today. I just want to be comfortable. I just want my gentle nudge button. And I'm not saying that every once in a while I don't hit atomic blast, because I do. I do, and I always regret it. Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that ever happened in my life. The friends have come and gone. The women have come and gone. The jobs have come and gone. But Alcoholics Anonymous is here. It's been here for me every Friday night for almost 13 years. And I am tremendously grateful, so stick around.